television nerds. My name is Anthony Marco, and welcome to TV ABCs, where we have conversations about Canadian television before cameras, before cuts, before channels, and explore how people behind your favorite shows are being creative. This week, Heather Conkey. Heather Conkey is a veteran Canadian television writer and producer who began her career as an actress. She was featured in multiple children's shows in the 1980s on TV Ontario, beginning first with Polka Dot Door. Her first screenwriting credit was for Beethoven Lives Upstairs in 1992. She has subsequently worked extensively as a writer for numerous television series in Canada, including Road to Avonlea, Seventh Heaven, The Zach Files, Pit Pony, Dark Oracle, as well as several made-for-television movies. As an on-screen performer, she was the host of Report Canada and Music Box. She played two characters in a music education show called It's Mainly Music and reprised the role of Agnes Peabody in a spin-off show called Dear Aunt Agnes. She is currently an executive producer and writer for CBC's landmark series Heartland, which is galloping through its eighth season with no signs of being put out to pasture. And now, my conversation with Heather Conkey. Although I've seen some episodes of Heartland, admittedly, I don't think it's in my target demographic, but the incredible... When I read up on this show, the incredible respect that I get for this show, just from the fact that the endurance of 8 years on a Canadian network, to me, for a scripted drama, is huge. It has to be an incredible experience to immerse yourself in a universe, especially a Canadian television universe, for 8 years.
It's kind of unheard of. We just finished... playing back our fourth episode, which was our 125th episode, not counting our Christmas movie. So it's a lot of hours of TV. And because we did so many per year, other than our very first year, we've been doing 18 1 hours every year for that 8 years.
Right.
It's like a way of life at this point. It's a huge family, and luckily, you know, the cast and crew have been amazing. I don't know whether any of us could have done it without the cast being so super, and after all these years, no divas, and just totally, totally into it still. And, you know, I would suggest maybe 65 to 70% of our crew are from the original pilot. So it's quite a boggling experience. It's certainly unlike anything I've ever experienced at all, because most episode driven television is like two seasons or three seasons or four seasons, or with like Road to Avonlea, I think they went seven seasons. I was on the first five of that, and that felt really long. This has felt, it's going by faster and faster. I don't know whether it's because we're all getting older and older, but this season has just flown. I mean, I can't even believe we've been here since the beginning of April, and here it is, October 17th, and I feel like I got here a month ago. It's just gone so fast. But it's an incredibly rewarding show because there is a massive fan base, and with the social media now, you're so aware of where your fans sit with you and what they love and what they don't love and what they absolutely hate.
Yeah, oh, they'll let you know, that's
it's like
for sure.
Immediate, yeah. It's such an immediate response that it's also, that's unlike anything, because in the 8 years that the show has been on the air, like that aspect of television and the interaction between your fans and social media and the blogs and Facebook and Twitter and whatever has just come into the fore. It was there when we started, but nothing close to where we are now. And I guess for me, that makes me realize just how long the series has been successfully running. Like we're the longest running 1 hour Canadian drama in Canadian television history now.
Wow.
We broke the record at 125. So, you know, other shows like Stargate, I guess, have done more, but they're not 100%
for sure.
Canadian.
Yeah.
This is the one that is, in fact, 100% Canadian. So it's been just such a fun ride, I can't tell you. And it's been on a learning curve for me, too, because I'm a Toronto girl and had never even been out west. And I think the only horse riding experience I had was 2 weeks at a Doug Ranch camp when I was like 14. So it's been a huge learning curve to watch all the horse work, the wranglers, again, a cast with Amber Marshall, who is such a horse person and really has learned on the show, but came to us with an enormous courage and talent and threw herself into it. And so now we're never going to know as much as the pros out here and the guys who really help us out. But, you know, at least I know more than I did when I started, that's for sure.
You kind of touched on something that I'd like to expand upon a bit, which is the idea of growing up in Toronto. Was the concept of a show like this, was there a romanticism to that kind of setting and that kind of atmosphere? I mean, I remember I watched a lot of TV growing up in the 70s. I mean, I'm 45 now. So I remember growing up with shows like Little House on the Prairie and The Waltons.
Yeah.
And that,
oh, I watched those too, yeah.
Yeah, those family-based dramas. And even at the time, I was too young to probably appreciate the full impact of, you know, all the relational stuff that was going on there. But they were incredibly popular at one time. Even going back to stuff like Ponderosa and some of the Westerns.
Yep.
Was there a romanticism for that with you that you were trying to reach?
There was, but I didn't know whether we would achieve it. I was not involved with the pilot, but I certainly knew about it. And when I came on when we got ordered, it was daunting because I thought, how are we? I knew how character-driven shows have to be, and just from my experience on Avonlea and Dark Oracle and Amazon and, you know, stuff like that. But I thought, how are we going to do a show every week with a girl who whispers to horses?
Yeah.
How is this even going to work? How can we make it fresh and new and different each week? And I was terrified, actually. I thought, I don't think there's enough stories to tell. But the one wonderful thing that it had going for it, among many, you know, many things, but the one thing that I really loved the most was the community of characters, that you could actually create a world. Like, it wouldn't have to be, with that many rich characters, it wouldn't have to be every single episode be pointed around the horse whispering aspect of the show.
Sure.
But that certainly was our hook. I mean, that was what the show was. It was about a girl with an extraordinary talent. But it's grown. It's still, every episode has a horse story, but it's over the years, it has become less oriented that way and more of, oh my gosh, we know these people. What is this family up to this week? And I think that's what the audience has also grown into it with, is this expectation of, I feel we know these people, and
right,
I can't wait to be part of their life, which was sort of like The Waltons.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and, Family was another one that was so brilliant. And
I remember growing up with Christy McNichol on the cover of Tiger Beat magazine.
That's exactly who I think of. I think of Sammy. She was so fabulous. You know, she was iconic. And I think that for the show to stay fresh, we've had to keep adding kind of iconic characters to keep it special, keep it different, keep it new. Amy, of course, is the main character, and Jack is the rock around which the family revolves, basically. But we've added characters as we've gone along. The character Georgie in season 6, who is kind of a classic runaway. I really wanted her to be like the character in To Kill a Mockingbird, you know, the very tomboyish, outspoken, sees through people in a split second, that kind of character. So it has evolved, certainly, from where I first looked at it and thought, oh my gosh, what are we going to do with this? But then I got here, and the landscape and the people and the horses and the mountains, of course, is absolutely stunning. So we had the added benefit, too, of the setting being a character and a romantic, wonderful, compelling look at a different part of the world. That I don't think a lot of people realized, other than, you know, Brokeback and Legends of the Fall, but they weren't series. This gave people a chance to actually look at a landscape. And the other thing that I think is wonderful about the show is that if we doing 18 1-hours in a season, we get to see all 4 seasons. So the audience gets to see spring going into summer, moving into fall, and the last few episodes, you know, just completely covered in snow. So they get to feel like they've been with a family for an entire year.
And
I think it's a huge part of the success.
Sure. And I'm wondering, to me, it would seem that one of the things that whenever I'm doing, every 2 weeks, we do kind of more the news side of Canadian television with Diane and Greg. And we talk about the idea that in a sitcom,
it's almost beneficial for a character not to grow, because you have to, or to even diminish. I think of, like, you know, a Homer Simpson character has to get dumber every year in order for it to get funnier.
That's so true. Yeah. We're so lucky that way. Well, look at Degrassi. They can only be there as long as they're believable that they're in high school.
Right.
So you constantly have to either have a changeover of cast, or you stretch the imagination that these 25-year-olds are still in high school. With us, they expect the characters to grow old. Like, they expect Amy started as, I guess she was playing 15 in season one, because we had her 16th birthday in season two, and now she's engaged and getting married. I mean, like, it's, we've seen her grow up. We had a character named Mallory Wells, came on the show. She looked like a tiny kid. When she left the show, she was a full-grown teenager, gorgeous woman. So the audience have watched the characters naturally grow, because every season is a year in their life as well. Yeah. So it gives us so much more way to expand. It gives us a lot more storylines, so we don't have to pretend there's something they're not.
Because it seems to me like, and I know for me, for instance, a romanticism around young people is being somewhere you're not. I grew up I'm based in Hamilton. I grew up in a relatively big city. And I always think mm-hmm. to myself, the difference of that, a small town or out on the prairie, that's a difference to me. And I think to myself, wouldn't it have been neat to live that for a while? And here you've got a young character. And I noticed at the end and the beginning of this season, you actually started to stretch the wings kind of outside of that universe a bit. Because I think it would be unnatural not to.
Oh, absolutely. I'm glad you brought it up, because at first we thought, oh my God, what have we done? There was such an outcry of her going off into a different environment, going to Europe, you know, having a life experience. But, you know, we have to realize this is a young woman now in her early 20s. And I remember going to London, England for the first time when I was in my early 20s. I came back completely changed. I looked at Toronto as if it was like a trading post. You know, I stood at the corner of Yonge and Bloor, and there were no high rises. There was no old buildings. There was nothing beyond maybe 20 to 30 years old. Right. And here I'd been surrounded by huge history and art and gorgeous buildings in London and everywhere I traveled. It was culture shock. So, we'll make long story short, when Amy comes back from Europe, she has changed, and she's a little bit snobby and almost blaming it on everyone else that they've changed, you know, and not being herself. And there was a big outcry after episode one saying, what have you done with our beautiful, innocent, lovely girl? But that's change, that's growth, and she will benefit from that. By mid-season, she's mellowed out, but also using all the things that she learned while she was away. So you just grow as a person. You mature, and you widen your viewpoints. And to have them stuck at the ranch all the time is unrealistic at that age. They are going to explore and travel, and they should, and they are going to change, and they should. So I think the fans have been very patient, because they trust us. And, you know, for every person who's saying, what are they doing, are they crazy, there was always another person who said, look, we've been watching this show for 8 years, and we trust the writers. They're not going to take us down a road that is absolutely stupid. So but again, without social media, we wouldn't have the pleasure and the agony of reading that, right? You know, but quite often, unfortunately, you're getting that feedback when you're well beyond and into the season and can't make huge changes to what you've written or shot. So, but it is, it's always good advice. It's always interesting. But I like the fact that our characters can change and grow, and I like to make it believable.
Now, I'm curious, with this palette of 8 years now that you've had to work with, and to me, so much of drama depends on an effective use of tension and release, essentially, in storytelling. Mm-hmm. That obviously occurs within every episode, but how much mindfulness is there now that going on for years and years and years and years, is there, it certainly happens through the characters, but are people more cognizant now as episodes are written about the longer form tension and release that now stretches out over seasons as opposed to just stretching out over episodes?
Well, we've always arced our shows ahead of the season. knowing exactly what that tension will be within that arc. And we have, I don't think it's obvious when people watch the shows, but for the writer's room, it's very important to know what the theme of the season is. And every season has a different theme. And every season we know exactly what knothole we're going to pull right. our characters through and have them come out the other side slightly changed. And I think it's really important to, in keeping it fresh, that every season has its own tensions as well as every episode. And now that we're at 8, I think it's time to almost start a slightly different tension because our Georgie character is coming of age. She's going to be playing 15. Mm-hmm. And I think it'll be interesting to watch her grow because she's just entering the most interesting years of your life. You know, 14 to 20 is pretty crazy. And I think it'll be wonderful to watch her with an Amy character who is almost a mentor and a teacher, especially as far as the horsework is concerned. They're very different people, but they meet in their the talent they have with horses.
And you certainly have the opportunity for a lot of parallel structure there as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. The thing that we will avoid doing is making Georgie a new Amy, because there right. never will be a new Amy. Amy is still going to be Amy, whether she's married or whether she's not married or whether, you know, whatever. She's an iconic character, just like Jack is. But they're wonderful characters to have other characters bounce off against. And I think there's great potential, again, as looking at it as a true family. This kid was just adopted into the family 2 years ago, and now there's going to be a huge eruption within that family towards the end of this season. And it's going to be how she reacts to all that, if we have, you know, the good luck to move on into another season. So that's all, you know, stuff that we have to keep in our heads for now.
For sure. Now, has there already been, so have you finished shooting season 8 at this point?
No, we don't. Okay. We don't finish until around the 11th, 12th of December.
Oh, okay.
So we've still got a ways to go.
Okay.
We're at this point, we're prepping a block 8, and we've got 9 blocks.
Okay.
So that's where we're at. We've still got block 8 and block 9 to shoot.
Now, I'm bringing this up delicately because I'm going to say, with the state that the CBC has been in over the past couple of years, I would think that there has got to be some apprehension. I mean, you're probably one of the most solid shows on the CBC right now, but mm-hmm. there's got to be apprehension going into the end of each season thinking, is this our last episode?
Oh, always. There's never been a season where we have had our fingers crossed. We've had lovely indications because our numbers have, I mean, I don't love talking about ratings, but I do think they count.
Sure.
And our ratings have been consistently high, and they're still, like, this season is no different. They're as high or higher than last season. So for whatever reason, this series has just grown and grown and grown and grown, audience-wise. And I think that's a huge thing to give us confidence. But, you know, with the state of not just CBC, but the state of any broadcaster, you know, every season is your last until you're
right.
told otherwise. There's always that tension. I don't know. I don't think it's a bad thing. It's good for adrenaline. I'll tell you. And adrenaline is good for creativity. So, we don't expect any different than that, and I don't think I'd expect any different from any other network either. And they've been incredibly supportive. I mean, they've been supportive right from the get-go. It's gone through a lot of different people at the helm, and they've all come on board, which is really, really terrific for us to have. And I think also, to be fair, we're a particular type of show. We're Sunday at 7.
Yeah.
We're not competing with the 8 o'clocks and the 9 o'clocks during the week. We're not the show that's going to get bumped from a time slot if it doesn't seem to be working or you know, trial and error. So we've been very lucky that we've had that position. We know that position. We know what a family drama is for that time slot. So it isn't nearly as dangerous a place to be in my mind as it is to be a 9 o'clock or an 8 o'clock during the week, especially with masses of competition, not just from the networks anymore, but the wonderful television that's out there, you know, that you have access to, you know, on any form of, you know, Netflix, whether it's online or anything. The palette is now just so massive. You know, I remember Avonlea, it was a totally different universe.
Yeah.
You know, CBC, yeah. We got over a million, pretty much, well over a million every week, but we didn't have, it wasn't the universe, the channel universe that it is now. So,
as long as you're not on it Sunday at 9. Sunday at 9, I'm PVRing 4 shows a week on Sunday at 9. It's crazy.
Just, I know, you can't even keep up with the amount of shows that you'd PVR. I mean, it's just brilliant television, too, though. Like, it's the golden age right now. It's fantastic. And, I'm very happy to be in the 7 o'clock Sunday slot. It's terrific.
It reminds me of when I was growing up, it was the Wide World of Disney slot.
Yes,
Sunday
exactly.
Evening, right? I mean,
yep. And then it was Avonlea, with Sunday at 7. And then, I guess, Wind at My Back followed. And then they didn't do anything for a while. And actually, Heartland was brought back specifically to win that slot again, attract that family audience.
It's appointment viewing, really.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great
thing. It is. And I'm amazed, though, by, again, the difference over the years. It was always appointment viewing, and now we're finding that PVRs are at a considerable number to our ratings.
Sure.
And personally, my family, who I keep track, did you watch? they generally PVR it and watch it maybe after dinner on Sunday or Monday night or whatever. But it is more appointment television than many, many shows, for sure. I wouldn't argue with that.
I'm scrolling down on the IMDb page. I always love doing this on any show that I look into, but I'm scrolling down all of the people that you've had on the show over the years. And you've almost seen a generation now of a lot, mostly, I mean, I'm sure non-Canadians as well, but so many Canadian actors and actresses come up.
Oh, I know.
You have
Tatiana Maslany, Torrance Combs, and they're, you know, now she's doing Orphan Black. He's doing Rain. There's been an amazing roster. We just finished locking episode 809 and 810 yesterday and today with Nick Campbell.
Okay.
And he's just so brilliant in it. He was in our Christmas special, our Christmas movie.
Right.
We got, again, just like you said, it's nice to see them out of their element. We go to a place called Pike River, which is actually the old North of 60 set. And it's where Will Vernon and his daughter live. And so we revisit that in 9 and 10 of this year. And it's just wonderful to watch him. He's an icon. We just stopped today and started a scene again that he was doing with our Sean Johnston, the character Jack. And the two of them together are just, we just had to stop and stare at each other and say, oh my God, they're both amazing. And they bring out the best in each other. They're just the best Canadian actors. And when they put them together like that, it's just kind of magic.
I would have to imagine that when you have many of your leads who've been on the show for so long, having these people come in week after week, it's like playing with a new musician almost. I mean, I grew up playing music, and on stage, whenever you brought somebody up on stage with you, there was an energy that came from that. There's that unexpected.
Yes. Yeah. And it isn't, there's a one-upmanship aspect to it too, but which makes everyone rise up and even go that much further. But it's also a magic. You're right. It's like, oh, that's something new to play with. I'm a musician too, so I know exactly that feeling that, wow, here's something else to play with. Here's something to play off of that I haven't had before. And it's the same with new directors as well. We've had some wonderful directors over the years, and a lot of them are staples, but then you get it. Bruce McDonald came on this year and did our second block, episode 3 and 4, and just brought fresh eyes, saw the ranch in a totally different way. His angles are different. There's just something different and special, and again, it freshens the show. It's great to see, and the actors rise to the occasion as well, because, whoa, who is this dude? We haven't worked with him before, you know? It's great.
I'm going to take this opportunity now to do what we like to do in the podcast, which is called a beverage update. I'll get started. I'm drinking something which is pretty close to boring. It is Crystal Light Lemon Lime Drink. However, I will say that it is artisanally crafted by me out of a sink.
Out of a sink? I have nothing. You think that's boring. I'm drinking Pure Life, whatever that is, water with nutrition facts that, you know, is 0, 0, 0. Calcium is 2%. But I live off this thing, so I'm obviously getting a good steady dose of calcium, if not anything else.
It's a small batch. It's a small run.
And as I was saying to you before, I mean, it's so dry in Calgary that I must drink like 4 liters of water a day. So this is just one little dab of it.
My parents for a lot of years lived down in Scottsdale, Arizona. I was used to it being dry, so
yeah. It was pretty much the same.
I want to totally change tracks if you don't mind, because I know I know for a lot of years earlier in your career you were tied to TVO, TV Ontario.
Yes.
And being in Ontario and being very familiar with TV Ontario, I'm wondering if you can talk a bit, reflect maybe a bit on the importance of provincial public broadcasters. We talk a lot on the podcast about CBC as a national public broadcaster. But to me, TVO is very iconic in Ontario, and I admittedly I haven't been around to all corners of the country where I've seen all of the different options that are out there. But I'm wondering if you could talk a bit about the importance of a provincial broadcaster, because you've probably seen a lot more than I have.
Well, from my personal point of view, I mean, iconic is the absolute word for it. I was really young when I started getting jobs there, and it was almost the base of learning I could never have gotten anywhere else. They were doing original Canadian half hours, fantastic shows for children, but probably some of the best in the world, and it was an incredible place to learn. And I got my start on camera hosting some of those shows, and then really started to love the other side of the camera and the producing part and the writing part. And that's really that's where I got my start. I mean, I couldn't probably have done the stuff that I'd done without that huge, solid background.
Right.
For me, it was like going to university. I was still going to university when I was there, but it was a different education entirely. And the people who were there were so passionate about what they were doing. And I was in the children's area, and fantastic shows coming out of there. Some of them I got a chance to do. You know, I got my start with doing It's Mainly Music and Dear Aunt Agnes, and I got to produce them and write them and do the music for them and act in them, and I couldn't have done that anywhere else. It was like a repertory theater. And I got my biggest break from TVO because everyone really learned their craft there, and I think what they broadcast was just top-notch, 100%, as good as anything in the world. There was a producer, Kevin Sullivan, who was watching Dear Aunt Agnes, and here's a funny story. Can I tell a funny story?
Yeah, for sure.
I was very, very depressed. I was working at night editing and working during the day producing and writing, and I also had a daughter, so I was doing a lot of it at home, and I just thought, this is crazy. You know, I don't have any family time at all. And I went to my daughter's Christmas concert feeling particularly sorry for myself, sitting behind a woman who had one of her sons was in my daughter's class. I think they were in grade one. And she also had a baby on her lap. And I thought, that's what I want to do. Why am I not doing that? Here's a woman who didn't have to race out of an edit room to come to the Christmas concert. She's here and watching her kid and has her little baby. But for whatever reason, she turned around and said hi, and I poured my heart out to her because she said, I know you. You've done stuff at TV Ontario. And I said, yeah, I do. She made me explain everything I did, and I thought, this lucky housewife, she turns around, she gives me her card, and she's the director of development at Sullivan Films, and they'd just come off doing Anne of Green Gables, and they were just about to go into Road to Avonlea. So she had rushed from the office, picked her baby up from daycare. She wasn't the idyllic mom that I thought she was at all, and they gave me the job on Road to Avonlea in that first season.
She was probably looking at the woman in front of her. Thinking
the very same thing. I want to be her. But it turned out that Kevin Sullivan was a huge fan of Dear Aunt Agnes, so he thought I was well equipped to write for all the crazy eccentric characters that would become Avonlea. And so there you go. If it weren't for TVO, I wouldn't have been able to do Avonlea, and if I hadn't done Avonlea, I don't think the CBC would have come calling for their next family drama. So it all, one thing runs into another. It's not just luck, but there's a whole lot to do with it.
For sure. I think there's a lot to be said. There are still young people that come up through television programs at community colleges from some universities and start with community television, work their way up to a mm-hmm. provincial channel, work their way up from there.
It's really a wonderful thing to do. If you get the opportunity to do it, you should do it, because you never know where it's going to take you. And you just have to be so curious and poke your nose in every department and make yourself annoying, as I'm sure I did when I was learning how to edit and, you know, doing all that stuff. I just made it my job to hang out with those people and figure out what it was they were doing,
right,
how they were doing it.
Now, do you find yourself thinking outside of Heartland at any point at this point? Like, I'm assuming, you know, as a creative person, you've got to say, geez, someday I would love to do this, I would love to do this, I would love to do this. Is it even feasible with the responsibilities that you have on the show?
Well, I'm a person that has always worked on more thing than one thing at a time. I always try to have as many balls up in the air as possible, because as you said before, you never know whether it's going to be your last season. So yeah, I have quite a few things in my head and a few things in development that are beyond the scope of Heartland and beyond that world. I will miss it when it ends, as it inevitably will at some point. But there's always things you want to do. There's always projects that are out there that are exciting and different. And, you know, it's important that you work on things that are exciting and different. Obviously, my first love is the show I'm working on now.
Sure.
But, you know, when you're on another one, it's another world, and you fall in love with that, too. So, yeah, and I'm also... That daughter I just told you about, 6-year-old, is now quite grown up and also a writer in her own right.
Oh.
And we are in development on a couple of things together, which is very exciting. And we wrote a Disney movie together called Harriet the Spy. And
I remember that well.
And now I get to see the world through her eyes as well, as a young person trying to make it into this industry. And and I see how hard it is. I really, really wanted her to be a lawyer. I wanted her to have a real job, but no, didn't work. Didn't work that way. But no, as long as she's happy.
I'm curious. One of the things I always do before the end of some of these discussions is talk about, I like to preface it by saying I was so influenced by television when I was growing up. Whether it was Saturday morning cartoons, I watched a lot of television. I'm curious, during the formative years of what's inspiring you to be creative now, as a child and as a youth growing up, pop culturally for you, television, music wise, what was it that you were absorbing, which kind of, you know, helped form your worldview of what you're doing today?
Oh, I love television, too. I'm like you. I watched a lot of it. I think you hit on it with the Waltons. But I do remember, watching the Ponderosa Bonanza.
Yeah.
And I remember playing with my little friends. I think we were probably four, 5 or 6. And because we thought there were just too many guys on it, we made it so that we were the daughters. So we played Bonanza, and we were the only girls in the family. Our names were Angela and Debbie. Angela and Debbie Cartwright. So we did mini episodes, I think, just in my backyard, just playing. But I also loved shows like Mary Tyler Moore, and before that, Dick Van Dyke. And my parents were kind of addicts and made sure I watched every single romantic comedy that Audrey Hepburn ever did. And, you know, I still love to go back and get those shows online and watch them, you know, To Catch a Thief, Peter O'Toole,
yeah,
Cary Grant. I mean, they steeped me in that stuff. So they were huge influences. Music-wise, because I was a pianist, I was completely caught between Chopin and Beethoven and the Beatles and the Stones.
Wow.
So really eclectic. And yeah. Again, my parents were a huge influence because they loved blues and they loved jazz. And so it was a house, pretty much a house that was filled with that stuff. Comedy is, I respect anybody who can do comedy. I don't know how they do it. I'd love to have funny bits in every single one of our scripts, but it's not like writing a full out 30-minute comedy.
Right.
Shows like Mary Tyler Moore and would just totally inspire me. I would have loved to have been able to do that. But
well, it's funny. It's funny how on the state of television today, it's hard to find a good situation comedy.
Well, Friends was the classic standard too. Like yeah. That was incredible.
But I mean,
what
like,
would you say? Well, in your opinion, what do you watch that's comedy?
Well, there's not much. Like, I mean, I'll admit I watched The Big Bang Theory, which is incredibly populist, and I think that works because of the characters and because of the actors involved. But a lot of the other comedies that are on right now, like I grew up during a time when comedies were teleplay comedies. And I love the idea of the Barney Millers and the All in the Family and even MASH. Like I'm an English and drama major. I love the concept of one set that you might diverge from for one or two scenes, but essentially the entire action takes place on one set. To me, that's an incredible skill to be able to write for that.
It absolutely is. And if you go back to the Honeymooners way, way, way back, that they had one set.
Yep.
And the fire escape, I think. If you can write incredible television for that, I mean, that's a skill for sure. That's incredible to me.
Yep.
Absolutely incredible.
So going into wrapping up season 8, I'm assuming you've got most of the stories put to bed and all of that stuff.
The writing is almost done. I'm staring at my bookcase here, and unbelievably, the binders have filled up from the beginning of April when they were all empty, and I was terrified, again, as I am at the beginning of every season. Butterflies galore. So the only binder left to fill up is the drafts of 17 and 18. The outlines are in there already. So that's what we're doing this week. And
Are you already tracking ahead to seasons 9 and 10 in your head?
In my brain, yeah. But I'm also a very superstitious person, and I think if I do that too much and then something happens and it doesn't happen, I'll blame myself for thinking too far ahead. but no, in my head I know where I want to go. I've got about 4 in my head right now, but whether they get approved or not is another thing.
You've been listening to the TV ABCs podcast at tv-eh.com. Thanks so much to Heather Conkey this week for coming on, calling live over the phone from Alberta, Canada. Well, actually, that's me calling live over the phone from Alberta, Canada via Skype. Please visit the website at tv-eh.com for all of our past episodes. You can find us on Twitter at tv_.eh. You can find me on Twitter at Anthony Marco. And if you'd like to, please go support our Patreon, which helps to, if you find any value on the website and you like, you know, you want to help us pay for server space or bandwidth or any of that stuff, if you go to the tv-eh.com website, you can find a link to Patreon, which allows you to say, you know what, a buck a podcast, I think that's worth it for me. An hour's entertainment a week is worth a buck to me. So maybe that's something that you could do if you enjoy this podcast, you want us to keep doing it. I hope you enjoyed this week's podcast. We got some great guests coming up, ones that I've already pre-recorded, so I know they're coming up, so I know that you're going to enjoy them. So keep listening. Every second week, we're going to try and do one of the ABCs podcasts, and I hope you dig it. Feel free to hit us up on Twitter or contribute to our subreddit at tveh.reddit.com. And that wraps up another episode for this week. And now back to your regularly scheduled programming.